Italian Wine Podcast. Cin cin with Italian wine people.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast. My name is Monty Walden. My guest today is Gabriele Gorelli. Gabriele was born in Montalcino in 1984, and his grandfather used to be the smallest Brunello di Montalcino producer. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct, Monty. Nice to meet you.
So what was it like when you were very small growing up with your grandfather in southwestern Montalcino? Is that correct?
Yes, right out of the walls of Montalcino, and a pretty high altitude site. He had this very small vineyard. You could really count the vines.
Less than half a hectare, wasn't it?
Sorry?
Less than half a hectare of vines.
Less than half a hectare, Brunello, and then a little bit more, but not Brunello, for home consumption, you know.
Well, what was your grandfather called?
Giancarlo.
Mm-hmm. And so he just had a little bit of vineyard, and did he grow like vegetables and fruit and things like that, as you say, like self-sufficient?
Exactly, and chickens and rabbits and all this kind of stuff. The old fattoria, but without living in the fattoria, because he was living within the walls of Montalcino, but 5 minutes drive from the vineyard. So he could go there literally every day to check and to work.
And you used to go and help him as well, did you, when you were a little boy?
Yes, of course. I did a lot of damage while being a little boy there. But I really developed a passion for that, because, you know, even my father and my uncle were working with my grandpa, and I was the only kid in the family at that moment, and I felt like I was destined to help them.
Uh-huh. And then you went. Obviously, you went to school. And what did you study when you left school? What was your speciality?
Oh, well, I always tried to be focused on something that didn't really put me on a track which I had to keep for a long time. That's why I decided to study languages. And so I studied English, I studied French and German. And I wasn't focused on the cultivation of the vineyard or stuff like that, because by the time I started school at the gymnasium, my grandfather retired, and my uncle decided to found another winery at the moment. So at that moment, my cousins were already born. And so I felt like, okay, the family wasn't the same as it used to be. And so I felt like I was going to learn how to live in the world, and then I could think to get back into wine at a certain point.
So you got quite a nice combo. So as a small kid growing up into an adult, you got a nice blend of practical knowledge from your grandfather and a sort of academic side to you, knowing really what you wanted to do as a possible career. You ruled out growing wine yourself. So then what was your next step?
So then I joined the university in Siena, and I did communication science. But at the same time, actually the same year, I started working in design, in photography. But everything was focused in Montalcino, so everything was focused to wine. And so this was a side effect of the power of wine, especially here in the area. So I started working as a designer, to do labels and web design and stuff like that. And at the same time, I started specializing myself in the product which I needed to know the most, which was wine itself.
Was that did you have a company called Brookshaw and Gorelli?
Exactly. The advertising agency, which is a wine focus advertising agency, as I was telling you, it was founded in 2004. So I was 20 years old, but I'm still there. I am the CEO now, and I hold 50% of the company now.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of day to day, what's a typical day for you? Assuming you're in Italy, I know you travel a lot, but just say a typical day in Italy and a typical day in, I guess you're based in the UK. When you're in the UK, you're in London, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so a typical day here in Montalcino would be, trying to get a grip on the program of things to do, so photos and video to shoot, and designing labels or designing websites. So meeting customers and trying to find a way to enhance their storytelling through images or through words and graphics. While I am in London, also in the UK, I go there especially under cover of a Master Wine student. So my days there used to be very tough. Tasting, blind tasting, and working on the theory. At the moment, since I passed the exam last year, I'm focusing on my research paper, which is a very, very lonely task you have to do to get to your title.
Oh, right. So you've passed the tasting and the theory, have you?
So I passed in 2 years because the first year I passed. I passed the tasting, but the 4/5 of the theory only. So I needed to resit one paper, which was actually viticulture, which I'm a little bit ashamed of, but wasn't about knowledge, the thing that didn't let me through. It was more about the fact I was so into it that I decided to answer the question I wished I have in my paper beside answering the actual question. And that's what get me a C. And so that's why I had to restate my paper the year after, which was 2019. And I passed that year.
Okay. So you just got to do your dissertation.
Yes. It's not called dissertation anymore. It's now called a research paper. It's slightly different aim, and but still, it's what in Cambridge or in Oxford they call the 150-hour project. So it's 10,000 words maximum project, which can be experimental or can be survey based, or it's a research project more than a dissertation. So it needs to be to have a lot of hard facts to work on and to show the analysis.
Do they call it an investigation still? An investigation into blah, blah, blah?
Pretty much. Yeah, that's about right.
So I imagine you're going to get through that and you will be an MW. I mean, how, if you, assuming you do pass, how is that going to change your life? Does it mean that you put your prices up, or are you just doing it because you see it's a personal challenge?
I think my life has been changing through the years I've been into the NW program, because by the time you make friends, you do networking with the guys that you work and study together with you, it's already a game changer, because you are part of a slightly bigger elite than the actual MWs one, but it's still an elite, because there are as much as students now that as much as Masters of Wine, so like 380 students to 380 Masters of Wine at the moment. So it's already an elite to be and NW student. And I joined the institute in 2014. So I've been there for a while. And that was really changing the way I approached work, the way I approached even life, I would say. And of course, it's strongly impacting and affecting every relationship and every task you're asked to accomplish. When being an NW, I think this will be even more evident and empowered, but with the same like tone.
Keeping your feet on the ground, you mean?
Mm-hmm, of course.
So, I mean, in terms of your work, you know, the designing and consulting, how has your study improved or changed the way that you work or the advice that you give?
Okay, so I've always been very, I want to say, humanistic and Mediterranean. In the sense that I've been very flowery in writing and not very strongly based on numbers and figures and hard facts, despite being, I mean, a good student even at school. But, you know, the NW really lets you distill the information, let you analyze the information, critically analyze the information, and let you convey your message in a more succinct, in a very effective manner that really empowers the way you're working, the way you are relating to people, and the way you're tackling your everyday tasks. And of course, there is also the real life thing. So the fact that if you want to pass the exam, you need to be in shape. So this is a side effect of the NW. I mean, you cannot really sit hunched over at your desk and try to pass going through the books. You need to have hands-on knowledge, and you need to be in shape, even physically in shape. And when I started my program, 1 year after, I felt like I had to start something that really let me feel better. And then I started doing yoga. And these never abandoned me throughout the program, and is now part of my life. So it's strongly changed the way even I'm living, by a side effect, of course, but still has.
Has that made you a better professional in terms of the advice that you give and the ideas that you have when you're with a client? You're trying to get out away less from stereotypical marketing, either sound bites or labels, or how has it impacted on your work directly?
I would say so, because it's something that really enhances your knowledge and your ability to compare things in a critical way. So you have a broader knowledge with a more than decent depth in several, I would say, stages of the value chain that really help you to know what you're talking about in pretty much every situation. And I would say, you know, things from a global perspective, because most of the time we have many experts in Italy that are so focused in Italy that they cannot focus on anything else. And I think what the NW has taught me most of the time is to make a step back and to kind of see the bigger picture, not to focus too much on something that will let you, you know, blur your vision on a more global picture. And that is really enhancing the power you have to put things together, to connect dots. And of course, there is no more stereotypical way to approach stuff. I mean, it's always something you want to experiment. It's always something that you want to try to go in that direction. And you always want to be critical about what you've done, what other people have done. And the real question is not what, it's why. It's always asking why.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, is there anything we've missed?
What do you think? What's something I can say, it's that not only the NW program empowered my, you know, company, which is the advertising agency, I even founded another company, which is called KH Wines in 2015, so 1 year after I started the program, which is focused on wine selection. I mean, it's provide services for the importers that want to import some Italian or European in general wine, or distributors within Italy, but also offers consultancy to wineries that want to go into international markets. So it is something that really puts into places things that I've been experiencing and studying while I was in the NW program.
So one of the things that you say, this idea of storytelling now is becoming very important for brands, particularly in competitive environments such as Brunello. I mean, people think that Brunello sells itself. It doesn't necessarily. In some ways it does, but you still need a story. And what are the storytelling tips that you could tell in general? If I'm a winemaker and I'm in Brunello and I come to you, what kind of thing would you tell me in terms of storytelling?
Okay, there are several things that I think now have a grip on the market, despite only being a producer of Brunello, full stop. You need to find your place in the appellation. I mean, you need to find your your audience. That's why I think one of the most important advices I could give to people is to be their own selves. Because they cannot afford just to pretend being something they are not, but they need to tell their story from a very visceral point of view. I mean, they have to be very honest on what they're doing, and to convey their message. I mean, their personality should shine through their products, but even from their communication. So it is not about going through their assets. It's more about going through their personalities. So develop what it's about for them to produce wine. So what's the family story? What's their approach? I mean, they do produce house style versus terroir driven, so single vineyard style, this kind of stuff. And of course, if they are under organic or biodynamic regime, this should be one of the most prioritizable values to convey, but always with the infused in their own personality, because we are full of people that do wine as a me too behavior. But which is something that really the consumer cannot get, and that's why I always advise people to find a deeper foundation of their wineries within themselves.
So that's interesting that you say that. I mean, imagine going back to your grandfather that he never heard of storytelling or marketing or anything like that, but he would have been a classic case of he could almost write his own story, you know, full of authentic, you know, anecdotes, man of the soil, that kind of thing, with no artifice at all. Wake up early in the morning, all weathers, outside, pruning and ploughing and looking after the vines. He'd have been a great candidate, I think, for your company. He would have been the easiest client you ever had or would ever have had.
Absolutely, that's the authenticity I talk about, especially in a very high quality area where there are a lot of producers that own very small pieces, bits and land of land. You need to have your own personality to shine through, because here we do not have any classification of the vineyards. So it's more a producer-related quality that you can perceive as a consumer. So if you stick to the producer that really works for your values, I think it's the best thing you can do, because you have a loyal customer, you have a loyal consumer, not somebody that will go for a better story, but not as authentic as yours.
Okay. Do you think you'll ever make wine yourself?
Well, I like to do blending. I don't think I am ready to oversee the whole process, but and of course I had no time to do that now, and it is something that really needs to settle in my mind. But yes, I do like to do blending, because I like to design wines in the sense that I wanna send specific messages when producing one wine, but I haven't got in control the whole value chain. I'm only having some vats to blend with. The only interesting experiment I did, it was last year, so vintage 2019, and together with Maurizio Castelli, we sourced a bit of Sangiovese, organic Sangiovese and organic Trebbiano grapes. And we did a full vessel and with a whole bunch and no sulfur dioxide, which was feet stomped. And we just have only 3,000 bottles of it. And it is a pretty nice example of a classic wine, a co-fermented, contadino wine of a few decades ago. That was the winemaking, the most close to a winemaking experience I had this year.
Yeah, contadino means it's sort of like a subsistence farmer. I mean, in the old days, you would call a contadino or a contadina not a peasant, but a subsistence farmer. And Maurizio Castelli is one of the most respected consultants in Italy for wine, in terms of both in terms of viticulture and in terms of winemaking. And he lives near Montalcino. And he's someone I've got huge respect for. So I didn't know you were working with him. It seems like a good combination with your youthful enthusiasm and his laid-back experience. That sounds like a pretty interesting project.
Well, we are very close friends. We like to do things together. And this idea of a co-fermented wine was something that we had since 1 year. And you know that this year the harvest, I mean, in 2019, the harvest was pretty delayed. And so we had time to sort the grapes at the right moment. And we wanted to do this try. And this product is going to be called Senza Rete, so without nets. There is no added anything. There is no safety net. And so the Senza Rete, which is also without connection, it's something that would be, I think, a trailblazer for several other varieties vinified with skins, with a whole bunch in the case of reds, and with no addition whatsoever.
Interesting. So what market is that destined for then?
Actually, it was stimulated by a friend of mine, which is also an NW student, and you see how networking works in the wine industry. And because she was looking for a co-fermented wine, which is pretty rare now, I would say. And I think New York market will be the first market to go to. And also Italy, because of you know, Castelli name, it's pretty renowned, and you know, it's renowned for producing wines for decades for the same customer. For example, it has Badia Coltibuono has been there for 40 years consulting. It's something that it's unique, because you have consultants that go back and forth from estates, but 40 years consulting for the same, it's pretty interesting, I would say. So, I mean, Castelli is a name that can be used to convey the message that this is a wine of absolute quality, but is made with a very rudimental and it's a very simple way and a traditional one. So there is a story beside that. And the Sensarete story, I think, is something that it's nice to tell, because now we are all connected in these days more than always, because we need to. But going Sensarete, going without safety net, and going without net, most of the time can be very healthy.
Yeah, for sure. But as long as the thing what you're saying is it's like a natural wine, but with a little bit of science behind it. And yes. That's why I think it's a good idea doing what you're doing with Maurizio Castelli. And as you say, I mean, 40 years at Badia Coltibuono as the consultant. It's one of the largest organic estates in Chianti Classico.
Exactly.
And, so it's a good marriage between his old head and your sort of younger way of looking at things and identifying, particularly as you mentioned, the New York, where anything sort of natural is very hot at the moment. But I think the idea of you coming up with a wine that is natural, but also I'm not going to say drinkable, but you know what I mean, not funky and corrupted unnecessarily. I think you could have a good impact there. You know, you're a great communicator, you're a young lad, and you've got a lot of energy about you, and you've got a great future ahead. And I'm sure once you've got your MW. And just to get that out of the way, rather than having the magic letters after your name, will allow you to focus even more fully on some of these projects. So I want to say thanks very much to you, Gabriele Gorelli, who's from Montalcino, but he's a man of the world and he's got many strings to his bow. He's probably going to be an MW one day. And next time you're back in Montalcino, be great to go down to see that vineyard, your family vineyard, where you were a little boy, and we can have a little look around there, okay?
Okay, I will. Thank you very much, Monty. It's been a pleasure.
It's my pleasure hearing, listening to you, and wish you every success with your education and with your business. Thanks a lot, Gabriele.
Listen to all of our pods on SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, Himalaya FM, and on ItalianWinePodcast.com. Don't forget to send your tweets to @ItaWinePodcast.